Yeah, what do you reckon just we'd just do a bit of for 5 minutes?
Us?
Yeah. No, not to record, just to warm up. What jump you running? That's quite nice.
It's a scale sports. You type doesn't see much of this macaroni. Yes, he's pretty soft.
Fucking gross.
I don't know. I've used it myself. I can do it in different things anyway.
That's right. I need to pay attention to Larry David as well.
Yeah, look,
it's a different story. I think there's a certain level of fame. And we'll get away. You use some of the ones that are like on Facebook are worse, that red one.
Okay. Yeah.
But it's blue, isn't it, on Twitter? It's a blue
one. I think it is. Yeah. There you go.
You've dropped your pen nice and early in the episode as well.
Really close to the microphone too. I saw the little light on the microphone like flicker because it hit it and it was so loud. So apologies if anyone's got that turned up. You said that you had in direct opposite to my John Cena, you had something?
Yes, we got the ball rolling on the caravan on the weekend.
Oh, right. I was actually just meant to ask you in general chit-chat about that. Because I got a Snapchat of the inside of the van.
Did you from JWL Constructions?
Yeah. The construction mob sent it through to me as well.
There you go.
Which was nice. He's got a lot of work to do.
He says he doesn't. You know, I think there is a fair bit of work to do. And there is some loophole. Obviously, if you're listening and you're thinking, hang on a minute, you're not allowed to do this during this time. So he's obviously just out on his own, and you're allowed to nominate 3 work sites a week. And so he's had 3 during the whole lockdown, but only last week he only had 2. So he actually nominated the caravan as a worksite.
Priority one.
So he was able to come over by himself and actually just chip away at it for a bit. And I don't know if you remember what the weather was like on Saturday, Jake, but it was the most rain I think we've ever had in a year and a half. It was. But he got heaps done. We started the floor's done and half of the wall framing on one side. So now bear in mind, it is going to be a very simple product. So it was starting to take shape and very exciting, actually. Even though I was bucketing down, I was standing there and I was saying, mate, this is fantastic. I was more of a hindrance on the day, I think. I was more just, we're just chatting NBA and stuff, and he just kept giving me those looks like, yeah, no, that's all great. Yeah, I watched the playoffs too, but I'm trying to work here. Did you know? I was going to say, I'm finding more and more about caravans as I go as well. Did you know this, Jake? That if you when it's parked and you're happy where it is, the back of the caravan, you actually have these like sort of wheel things that come out because the wheels on mine are in the middle. So there's like a I don't even know what you call it, but like a hinge where you bring out the back so it stays stable.
So you're not like wobbling around based on like a Mr. Bean sort of car. You're not pivoting on an axis. You've got the support all around.
So because the roof needs fixing as well, I've had a tarp on it the whole time, which has done a great job, but it carried a lot of water on the weekend. And I found out this thing about the caravan the hard way, because James and I were in the back of the caravan and we were talking about what we could do with that space at the back of the caravan. And because of we had two bodies at the back of the caravan, and these wheels that I'm talking about weren't up, it just went completely sideways to one end, and then all this water just come rushing off it as well. And hit the windows and everything where our lounge room is. And there's a couple of housemates just in the wind watching the footy at the time, and they just looked out like, what's going on out there?
Just watching you two in this caravan tipping up and down.
You can imagine housemate Sam coming out to give us tips on how to build a caravan.
Of course.
Oh, it's an absolute shit show, mate.
Taking a break from his OnlyFans account.
The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.
Benny, a huge episode of the Magoos coming up. We also want to thank Alan Christensen for his appearance on the show. If you haven't had the chance to listen to that, please go back and do so. A fantastic chat there. Another man who's donated some time to the Magoos, which we absolutely love, is our third co-host. We like to try and diversify opinions away from just yours and mine sometimes, Ben. And Matthew Lodge joins us on the program now. Matt, welcome to the Magoos.
Boys, thank you for having me. It's good to know that you've sort of gone there with Alan Christensen and then you've gone, you know what we need now? We need just a GWS Nuffy just to really just sort of set the scene. So, no,
I feel like that might be a bit of a running joke from now on, whoever we get on, that people don't actually realise in our seventh episode we had the great Anthony Koutafidis on. So really, it's all in great company, to be honest.
And since then, Coot has obviously tightened up his Instagram DMs, I would suggest, because when he rolled
your
into
your personal account.
Yeah, when he rolled into your joint in Preston, Ben, to record that on a Thursday afternoon about 1 p.m, I reckon he thought he'd stepped into another world, but it was huge for us. So, and as a lifetime Carlton fan, after Matt, will now be our second biggest guest, Cooter. So we're proud to have you on the show, as Carlton alumni. Can you take us sort of through just try and give us a little bit of background into your footy history and then how you sort of found yourself where you are today still within that industry?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a bit of a when we were chatting off air before, you were talking about sort of been everywhere, man. Well, so I was born in Melbourne, and I was born into a Collingwood supporting family. I didn't really have too much to say on the matter there. So I spent most of my existence as a Collingwood supporter. Moved up to Byron Bay, the football hub of Byron Bay, and that's actually where I sort of started playing footy up there, and we're sort of only just part of a couple of expats that sort of brought the game up there, because I'll tell you what, boys, that there wasn't too much footy being played up there. There was about four teams and you'd play each other about five times to make up a season and there you're away. So fortunately, I then sort of moved up to the Gold Coast, was playing a bit of footy on southeast Queensland up to Brizzy, then found my last 2 years down in Sydney, playing school footy there, and then was lucky enough to get picked up by the Blues at the end of 2011. Took me up to I guess the dream of getting drafted, and then spent the year on the list, and dug a hole in the footy department budget of about 45k. We're not too much output on field performance, and then moved on to other things. But that's sort of it in a bit of a snapshot.
So you talk about how you sort of moved on from footy almost quickly as you got into that elite system. But so you then moved into media work and you sort of just gave footy away. How hard was that for you to then just transition into a complete new career while still sort of being in the same industry?
Yeah, I'd like to say, lads, that it was totally my decision to give footy away. Unfortunately, the old body didn't give me too much of an opportunity. I ended up only playing a total of about six games total while I was on the list. That includes a NAB Challenge game, a practice game, and a handful of AFL games. I unfortunately suffered a fair bit of arthritis in my left knee. Which certainly wasn't ideal to contract at the age of 18. It was always a bit of an inhibition sort of all the way through the elite pathway and doing it as an elite sport. And so once I finished up at the Blues, had a consultation with a orthopaedic surgeon who just said, look, your knee's rat shit, so you'll... there's sort of at that point when you're 19 years old and you think you're pretty bulletproof, that's it's not exactly the ideal news to hear. But the orthopaedic surgeon, he said, look, we're probably going to say that we're going to need to give you what's called a tibial osteotomy, which is what's involved with that one is that they basically break your, under anaesthetic, of course, break your tibia and fibula to kind of realign your kneecap. I was sort of weight bearing a lot through the lateral side of my knee and completely wore away any cartilage and meniscus through there, straightened the whole leg up from sort of the femur and in line with the tibia and fibula, and then screw that back in. Basically it's a sort of a 12 to 18 to 24 month sort of recovery period to really kind of obviously sort of get yourself running and right and get the strength back in it, but that by having that prestige, you pretty much write off any chance of playing high level football again. So that was the go. I ignored the advice after about 18 months and decided to have a go at playing VAFA footy with St Kevin's Old Boys. And I reckon I got about 4 games into there before I started having more injuries. And I think at that age of about 20, 21 there, I thought, I don't think footy's quite for me anymore. So that was sort of the post-career. But yeah, to back to your point, Jakey, I found myself, I always kind of wanted to, in some ways, shape or form, once I left the Blues, sort of stay involved in footy somehow. I had a fair old passion, and a lot of teammates and footy players would hate me for saying this. I had a big old passion for journalism and for sports journalism in the first instance, and that sort of manifested in actually being able to get a job with the Blues in their media department and do a lot of website content, work in their digital media, all that kind of stuff. And sort of took it like a bit of a duck to water to that race, sort of straight away. And then I guess slowly but surely sort of doing that alongside some study, doing that alongside some other internships within the sporting media landscape, that was fortunate enough that it kind of set me up to what I'm kind of doing today.
Oh, beautiful. I wasn't expecting that full story there. Not at all. I absolutely love it. I love it. As someone who has been using Premiere Pro for about 3.5 weeks now, any jobs going?
I would love to say that there would be jobs going. Trust me, you and I probably share about the same level of capability on Premiere Pro. So unfortunately, I can't help you there, Benny.
That's right. I'll try with the next guest. We'll get there one day.
We'll find someone soon enough to be silly enough to say yes to that question. Oh, great. Well, can you edit some stuff for us?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So before we get stuck into some of the burning topics in footy, what are you doing with yourself now? Because you are still in the industry, aren't you?
I am, yeah. So I work for an organisation called TLA, which probably is more commonly known in the football industry as Craig Kelly's sports management agency. So I don't work in player management or talent management. There's quite a number of offshoots to that business, one of which includes marketing communications. So if anyone sort of asks what I do, I basically work in sports publicity. So I've been there for 5 years. Do a little bit of work with some of our football talent and have a bit of engagement with our football talent or players talent, whatever you like to call them, in terms of PRing them or promoting them for certain campaigns or clients. But more day-to-day, I sort of work with certain clients, a lot of breadth of sort of stuff, but in short, more generating publicity for certain campaigns that they have. So a lot of my clients range for, I'll do a little bit of work with the AFL, do a lot of work mostly with Cricket Australia, and so mostly with sport, but a few other things that we've done, do a little bit of stuff in kind of brand and sporting brand spaces, and brands associated with sport, like Carlton Draft or those sort of types. So it's fairly it's still got an involvement in the sporting landscape and still have a bit of a touch point with AFL footy, but no 2 days are the same, really.
Absolutely beautiful. So I need to ask this question though. You've Carlton rookie for a bit, and as you already explained, it didn't all go to plan. But fast forward to today, you're a self-confessed GWS supporter or fanatic. Walk me through how one can go from, growing up barracking for Collingwood, playing in for Carlton, or at least on the list, and then now a GWS fan. So is it just someone in the water up in Byron, or is it just what's
it's a bit of a cardinal sin though I've committed there in the venue. not quite to change teams. The best explanation, I get asked this a lot as well, unsurprisingly, when you follow a team that's only been in existence for 9 years. Good, as I said, grew up as a Collingwood fan. I would say that I never truly kind of, when I got to Carlton, it's a weird environment. You're in a paradigm that is so different from what the three of us would now consider to be footy fandom. Like it's a very much us against the rest mentality. You sort of, and when you're a player in that instance, you don't actually, it's sort of a weird one because you're a squad of 45 and 45 doesn't go into 22 on a weekly basis. So as a business model, AFL footy falls down in a long way because you've got half your employees who are unsatisfied on a weekly basis. But so it's sort of a weird one where you go for the team and you go for your mates, but you're also like, oh, geez, I wouldn't mind if he did his calf so I can get a look in next week. Not that I was any of it in any way close to being in contention, but that's another story entirely. And then once I stepped away from footy, I was pretty dark on footy when I left the Blues. It was sort of one of those things where you build yourself up, you achieve your dream, you're living 12-18 months of a lifestyle that is unbelievable insofar that you basically get to train and live healthy. And your body is kind of your source of income insofar as that and you get to play footy on the weekend and you get access to all the services. But once I left, I was really dark on footy for 2013, didn't watch a lot of it, didn't want to talk about it, even though I was kind of still working in it and doing a little bit of stuff with Northern Blues at the time. But it wasn't until about 2014 that I sort of thought, all right, I've got to get myself over this. I've got to get back into footy somehow. Didn't really feel like I could go back to Collingwood after the experience that I had. So it was just one of those things. That I turned on the telly and GWS were playing Sydney. It was Buddy Franklin's first game for the Swans. It was absolutely pelting down with rain. And I started watching the Giants. And the Giants, it was sort of level at three-quarter time. They'd obviously spent the first 2 years getting belted every week, having won two games in their first two or three games in their first two seasons. And they I think they kicked 7 or 8 goals in the last quarter and won by 6 goals or something like that. And it was just the style of their footy that I was like, oh, I could get around watching that style of footy. And so not that that was the absolute moment. It sort of took me a little bit of time to get through, but it wasn't then until about later in that year, I actually went up to Sydney and got invited to their function through some work and sort of met a couple of GWS people. They were actually playing Carlton, funnily enough, that day. And so I was up at Spotless or Giant Stadium ended up watching them. GWS, I think, won pretty convincingly, but it was just sort of the feeling of the club that I sort of got around. And having been outside of footy clubs for a little while, for sort of 2 years at that point, and being a little bit kind of disillusioned with footy, I was like, no, I could get around these guys. So actually, I on that moment after that game, bought a membership in 2014 and, sort of haven't looked back since. And fortunately enough, since in the last 4 years, they've had a pretty reasonable run there. They're having a bit of a wobble at the moment, but it's been good fun the last couple of years.
I think in terms of as far as changing teams go, I think that a well put together story like that is definitely required.
Has that been rehearsed?
At least it makes sense, you know, so many other people. You know.
As I've said, I've been asked a fair few times, so if you ask me, I've had plenty of cracks at it. So.
Well, I mean, I know someone who has changed from the Bulldogs last year. They won the flag in 2016 and has said, no, I'm not copping it anymore. I'm going to follow the Suns loosely, but I'm not on the Dogs anymore. And you think, they won a flag 4 years ago, like after not winning a flag for 50-something years, whatever it was. So, like, surely if you're going
to
jump off...
You used to know them then.
Yeah, well, yeah. It's a strange old world, isn't it? But I feel like there's a lot of merit to that story. And it does lead us now to ask you, as the GWS fan... where do you see things? Where is your outlier on the GWS landscape currently sit?
Yeah, it's got a lot of layers to it. I was convinced after the grand final and last year and I apologise on behalf of the GWS Football Club to every single footy fan for essentially ruining Christmas Day on AFL Grand Final Day last year. That was not ideal, but I was pretty convinced, because there was a lot of talk, you know, when the Crows got done in a similar fashion to Richmond, that, you know, they were going to, that the Giants going to follow this sort of downward trend of, you know, being so kind of spooked by the result that happened on Grand Final Day that they were going to sort of fall in a hole. And then they came out in round one, you know, which feels like 2 years ago, against Geelong and looked so sharp. And I just went, whoa, this is incredible. And then obviously the shutdown happened. And to be honest, I mean, they just look like they haven't got their mojo back since at all. You know, they've basically gone through the season so far you know, stringing consecutive losses followed by consecutive wins followed by consecutive losses followed by consecutive wins, and now I've lost another two on the trot. And, you know, really, to in order to make finals and seriously make a dent in finals, they need to be pretty much perfect from mm-hmm. here in. And they've got a reasonable draw to, in the run home. I'd say that St Kilda is probably the highest placed team that they face. Obviously, them knocking down top four ambitions. But it's it's an interesting quandary at the moment for the Giants, and I think there's obviously a couple of big name players out of contract, the coach is out of contract, and I think this next month is going to be a pretty defining month for them, not just for this season and what happens in the aftermath of the postseason, but to really sort of see what happens for the next couple of years. Because I mean, being up in the Sydney market, and then also being probably the lesser profile of the two teams, they need success to maintain not only their relevance in the broader AFL landscape, but certainly in that Sydney market as well. They really need to, you know, stay near the top of the tree.
Mm. So there is some names, as you said, that are out of contract. I'll just reel them off to you, a little bit like the old word association. You just give me a yes or no whether or not they'll be in their current position at the club from 2021 onwards, please. So we'll go right to the top. Leon Cameron?
No.
No?
No.
Oh, hang on. Well, I mean, let's just pause that crap game for a second. Now we've got to delve into this. So from all the media reports and whatever, it sort of reads as if, you know, they've agreed to terms and he just hasn't signed the deal. But are you thinking that deal will never get signed, obviously?
Oh, look, I think when those reports started to surface, and obviously there's a bit of stand by your man sort of verbatim that was coming out of the Giants, you know, they were in a little bit of a period where they were starting to string some games together. But I think that the difference between their best and the worst is so polar at the moment. And even when they have been at their best this year, like, they haven't put any teams away at all. And I think when they were going at their best last year, and even probably, I actually feel like they were playing some better footy in 2017 and 2018 than they did for a majority of 2019. It was what attracted a lot of people to the style of play was this sort of shotgun footy off the back half, slicing through the midfield. See blokes like Lachie Whitfield get the ball in their hands, and you go, we know that there's a 50 metre bullet pass that's going to hit Jeremy Cameron on the lead, and then he's going to swing inside and hit, you know, Himmelberg or Finlayson, tit out, and they'd go back and swap and slam the goal through. It just looks like they have been so tentative in their ball movement, and I wonder if that is a product of just being probably being coached in a way that, you know, that there's more, you know, if they've got the two options and they're unsure, rather than take the game on, they would rather, you know, which a lot of teams do, they'd rather kick wide, take a stoppage. And stoppages, which is an area of their game which they've been previously pretty good at, they haven't been damaging from that aspect this year. I haven't got the stats in front of me, but I'll say while they probably potentially are ahead in teams that they've played, they certainly haven't got the scores from stoppages, which has, I reckon, been a benchmark of their game from years gone by.
That is the sort of stuff that we do not get a lot of on this program. That is a genuinely informed man who knows a lot about the game, who knows exactly where his club is falling down, which I think we could probably listen to all day. But I've still got another four names to get through on my list.
Go through. I have a feeling that we could be going for some controversial answers.
Okay, so we've sacked the coach, for the want of a better term. Jeremy Cameron.
Yeah, I don't think Jez is going to be there like next year either.
Ooh, bang, bang.
I've hit two from two. I was saying this goes back to a little bit of my point that of the sort of the whole sort of broader issue of relevance in the competition for the Giants. I think there is potential for the Giants to potentially invest a little bit more in the likes of a Himmelberg and a Finlayson. I think Cameron was... No doubt exceptional. He was obviously the best forward in the competition, the Coleman Medal winner last year. But I wonder if they're to continue going with this three-pronged tall attack, which they've been doing in their forward line. I just, unless Cameron's the mobile one that gets up the ground and things like that, he does create a little bit more harm than good by being stationary in the forward 50. And I think, and we'll explain, there's a couple of other names that you're going to throw at me, Jakey, but I think The other thing that Giants need to look ahead is that they sold the farm a little bit for last year's draft. They got players in so they could secure Tom Green and Lachie Ash. And it's really been at the chagrin of their own draft hand. They've got a late first round pick as it currently stands, and then their next pick is not into deep into the third round. And I really think that if they are struggling from a salary cap point of view thing to keep guys like Cameron, Harry Perryman, Zach Williams, if they need to move Cameron along, get him into the market of a Geelong, who's been thrown up there, or an Essendon, but thinking potentially Geelong, given that their draft hand as well, I have a feeling that they might actually have the bargaining chips on the table that could actually give GWS what they want and get Cameron in return.
God, if Cameron goes to the Catters, I will be spewing.
It's purely opinion, and maybe it's conspiracy and I'm reading too much into it, but obviously I've shot down two from two so far, but I think there is going to be I don't think they can keep them all. Obviously you're seeing the amount of kind of ex-GWS talent that runs around in the competition at the moment. People calling GWS Giants a bit of a footy factory for other teams. You could make a fairly decent 22 out of ex players there, but I just feel like this could be the year that, particularly if they don't make finals and drop off the perch a little bit, that they're the sort of bold decisions you're going to need to make for the betterment of the longevity of your footy club.
I like it. So you did mention a couple of the names on my list here, so we'll keep working through them. Harry Perryman, because he's one I'd love to come to Carlton. So yeah. I'd really love that if you could give him up.
No, I think Harry will stay. So, and for the reason of, I think that the other part of GWS's kind of mantra as well is Harry's a GWS Academy recruit, Colin Gully boy, New South Wales product. I think they want to, for their pathway system as much as anything, and for the kind of perception to look after their New South Wales talent. And I have to say, Jakey, unfortunately, if it got to last year, I probably would have said, "Yep, you can." Harry can probably walk, I reckon. But he was leading the Coleman for about four or five rounds there, so off a halfback flank. So. No, I think he stays.
He stays? What about Zach Williams from the back half?
I think Zach stays too. Zach is funny. I actually played footy with Zach for New South Wales. And I'll give you the red hot tip, boys. It probably doesn't make any difference to him, me saying this at all. But I did not think he'd be in the position that he is now as one of the more damaging halfbacks in AFL footy. He's so crucial to the Giants. And I think his story as well. Narendra boy coming through the New South Wales system, got a lifeline from, thrown a real lifeline from Kevin Sheedy when he was at the club. I think he stays too.
And the last one is a name that always seems to be thrown up with GWS is Josh Kelly, even though he decides whether or not that long contract gets triggered soon enough. I think towards the end of this year, I think he's played the 2 years and then he can trigger another seven or something. So do you think that he stays on next year or does that market value?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I think there was a lot of spotlight on Kelly, in those early rounds after lockdown, when I think, there was a bunch of GWS midfielders that were really, behind the eight ball. But I think he's probably been our standout player for the last certainly 5 or 6 games. But to answer your question, it's a tough one. I've got confidence that Josh will stay. I think he'll get to that stage where he's 25, 10, 26 by that stage. I think 8 years into the system, he's got another year at least before that contract gets triggered. So we'll just have to wait and see on that one. But I'll be confident he stays.
Eric, you're very insightful. I've not learned this much about GWS for a long time. It's a long time. What about, lastly, Joe Danaher?
I personally don't think if I'm looking to offload Jeremy Cameron, or if I'm not offloading Jeremy Cameron, I just don't think there's a place for Big Joe.
It's a direct swap.
Real downgrade top area.
I think this is not knowing anything, but I think he's a pretty late ender there that he'll find himself in Sydney, and I think he'll be wearing red and white. Joe's from my draft year as well, so and you do tend to kind of hope and wish for the best for some of those blokes. And he's obviously had a pretty ratchet last couple of years. And I've bumped into Danaher in the weirdest places, including on the pub cricket field in previous times. So if he can kind of surround himself with the absolute larrikins and louts that play pub cricket like myself, I wish him the best at the top level.
Absolutely. Just at time of recording, it looks like it's just breaking that he actually has just come off the Essendon injury list. So there's no confirmation whether he's playing this week against the Hawks, but I would love to see it.
I would say. You love to see the best players play, and when he's up and going, he's pretty exciting, aren't you?
Yeah.
So, Matt, we're absolutely rapt to have you on the show, and hopefully we'll be able to have you back throughout this season and into the future as GWS continue on their way. But before we let you go tonight, we want you to give us the final answer. Will they make the finals this year, the Giants, in 2020?
I am saying they will make the finals in 2020.
All right, well, that probably means Carlton don't. So now I'm pissed.
I'm sorry. I think games against Freo this week, there are no certainties, and I think what this season has shown that there is no certainties. The ones that are supposed to be blowouts have been pretty dour, low scoring, tight affairs. So Freo, not sure in this order, but Freo, Adelaide, your Blues, Melbourne and Saints to finish. You'd see probably them winning 4 out of 5 on paper with the talent they've got there, and I think that gets them home.
Yeah, unfortunately, I tend to agree. I was hoping that you might throw them under the bus with the coach and the staff all as well. I thought they might just all be out the window.
Controversy.
No, we really appreciate your time joining us on the Magoos, and yeah, can't wait to see more of you on the socials in the future and cheering your Giants home. So thanks very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, good boys. Thanks for having me.
If I could find a way, I'll take back all the words that I heard you, and you'd say if I could reach the stars, I'd give them all to you, and you love me, love me like you used to do.
You're quite good with lyrics, actually. I've come to
know. Yeah, it's not a secret talent, but like
they just sink in, do they?
Yeah, yeah.
Like would you say it's effortless for you?
The one thing. Like, I think that I'd be great on that that TV show that
The Masked Singer.
Because I can't sing. Yeah, Lock In Those Lyrics or whatever it was called. With Wayne Brady.
Wayne Brady, you would be good at that.
Yeah, although they're still going to have some sort of rhythm and whatever. If they could have put like my schoolwork and stuff to songs, I would have been sitting in the VC exams just like bopping along, just like nailing out PE, because it would have stuck, but they didn't, so it didn't.
There you go. See, I'm quite the opposite. Like I know the first lyrics to like every song that I've ever heard, and then it just falls completely flat from there.
Yeah, right. Lose interest.
No, it's not an interest. I just don't. No, it's definitely not an interest thing, because I like that song by Cher. If I could turn back time, hopefully the Bombers can do that sometime soon.
Maybe that's the problem.
Yeah, we don't know. Maybe, yeah, if we could turn back to 2000. What do you think of Lloydie's comments? He goes ham on the Bombers, doesn't he?
Lloyd. He's interesting, isn't he? It's like he goes the other way of not being biased. It's like, well, I'll bash him and then
I mean, there might be that element to it, but he definitely, I think it's because he's seen success at that club and he saw what it was, in the early 2000s, where it's sort of like, this is just not the team that, like, it's nothing like that anymore. I think he talks about just, being bullies and stuff, and we're just too nice. I think he hits a nail on the head more times than not, particularly on the Bombers. But
yeah,
that's all I have to say about that.
The Magoos.
Benny, time for my favourite part of the show, when we get the Magoos community in. We're all here on Zoom, a bit looking like the Brady Bunch, and we've got the biggest game, Ben, and it needs no introduction.
Well, I love how you said at the start of this that it's your favourite segment, because this has got you written all over it, Jake, because let me just read out to you a couple of games we've got on this round. We've got Richmond West Coast, which is, I mean, that's the one that really speaks for itself. Then we've got the Dogs versus Cats, which is massive too, and then even D's Saints. But what one are we actually running with?
Please. The greatest rivalry in Australian sport is Carlton and Collingwood. And the two teams, they've never been more relevant to a top eight position than they are now, mainly Carlton's fault for a while. but Carlton on the verge of the eight. Collingwood have just struck some form up after having a solid victory over North Melbourne. And, you know, this is the start of this little series of elimination finals. And we had to get two of the great Magoos supporters on. We've got Lucas, who is a well-featured Magoos community member, loves his baggers. Lucas, welcome back to the Magoos.
G'day, boys. Happy to be here.
And I reckon we've got the old long-time listener, first-time caller in Tommy Snell, big pies man. Welcome, Tom.
Listening to your podcast on Monday night with Christian, and you obviously blew the bank in the budget because now you've got the Fluffers Mean Street coming in just to let, you know, production tickle along for the until you get the next big dog in. But thanks for having it.
We didn't want to like lose touch of who we are just because we've had a couple of big guests on. You know, we still are the heart of the footballing community. We didn't want to blow it out too much and just get the big names on every single week. You know, we want to stay true to our values, and we've done that with two of the most hardcore footballing fans in all of Twitter on board. And Lucas, we'll start with you, mate. Try and be as like, I've looked through Carlton's run home, and I don't want to get caught just talking baggers with you, because we could do it for days. We could start our own podcast. But is there any way we don't make the finals?
Oregon, yeah, it's all about this week, to be honest. I mean, and Ben, you can I just say the talk of the round, I was listening to Gary and Tim this morning, and they flagged Collingwood and Carlton as the game of the round. So
it's the game of the season.
No, I do agree. I just like building it up a bit. But,
this is definitely scary. Our biggest test, Jake, I would say. I think we match up on them pretty good, but if we're going to play finals, we have to win this week.
And Tommy, last night we saw Collingwood get back into some sort of form. I think it's one of those games where you just sort of look back, and it was just sort of like that little kickstarter to sort of start to tick the wheels over. The second half was fairly impressive. Obviously, Sidebottom returns to Melbourne awaiting the birth of his first child. But things are starting to pick up again after a lean month.
Especially that second half. I thought, you know, the last probably 2 months, a lot of teams, they do come to play Collingwood, you know, put the pressure on us. And then when we don't have that forward line system sort of rolling the way we like to, it's hard to get decent kicks inside 50 when the pressure up the ground on the ball carrier. So I know he's much maligned, but I thought, and he only had 5 touches and he only kicked 1 goal, but I thought he structured us up a little bit with Big Mason. And if I was Collingwood, I'd be sticking with us, you know, sticking with him for the rest of the year, because he does structure up. And he allows someone to get up the ground. And I think, you know, he will either take a Batman Jones or he'll either take, you know, a Weeding or something. And I think he's kind of important to us in kind of a funny, weird, strange way. So, no, it was good.
I tend to agree with that point you made there. Sorry to cut you off, Ben. But, and I mean, Tom, you yourself were a much better footballer than Mason Cox was, but something that, you know, in a previous life, you and I used to play on each other quite a bit, and something that I always used to think was big blokes don't get any smaller. So they're always that danger in the air, because they always have that height on their side. And I think what we saw with Cox a couple of times last night was that even when he had first hands to the ball, it's just little deft touches and things. And I mean, when my check comes back, it might be a little bit of a different story. But I think you're right in terms of that whole structure piece, because big blokes don't get any smaller, and he gives you a target to kick to at the top of the square.
I just wish he was a good target. You know what I mean? I wish he was good. But I think we all know that footy's just played, it's played as a team structure, and having a big 200 and whatever centimetre bloke centre full forward, if that's going to help us kick goals. You know, he had 4, I think, score involvements, 2 direct goals. If we get that from him every week, then, you know, you've got to move on with him. I think we've got to keep going with him. And, you know, he's a proven match winner, all my Richmond fans out there. he's a proven match winner. So we'll see how we go, mate. But I'm just happy that we ended up beating North and we beat them pretty comfortably. And it probably gives them a little bit of confidence going into what is a massive game on Sunday here.
Not just beating North as well. I've just wrote down here, I think he might have put Jai Simpkin into early retirement too after trying to take the big fella on. Wasn't that just embarrassing?
If that happens to a Carlton bloke on the weekend, I'll cry.
Was it the pig Greenwood that got him? That got Simpkin?
No, it was Mason Cox.
Cox.
Yeah. It was Cox. He tried to take him on just outside 50. Then tried a little pirouette and Mason just like, what are you doing?
Okay, that's another thing that Lambo could vouch for. Back in Division 1 Reserves 2015, you'd never take me on around the mark, would you, Jake?
The wingspan's too big. The wingspan.
You'd have to get around my guts.
Actually, whilst we're talking about selling some candy, I believe Lucas actually might have sold me some candy in under, what do you reckon it was, under 15s?
15s, Alpham Central, it was about round 17. I was on about 50 out on the half-forward flank in front of the crowd. I believe it was to win the game. I don't remember it at all, actually.
Pretty close. Embellishment, gee, we love that.
Pretty close. Kicked the snag too from about 35 after I completely bought it and dived into the Altham bench basically and slotted it nicely.
And I'll just say on that, I actually kind of agree with you, Tom, even though I give Mason Cox a lot of shit. I kind of agree with you, but I reckon Wiedering and Jones watching that game last night, they'd be pretty comfortable going into this week. I think our back six, your back on and our back on, extremely good. I think it's going to be a battle of who can use it better out of the midfield.
The only thing is, though, with Mason staying, because he's a staying put forward, you know, there's not very many of them around at the moment. Yeah. And what he does, he allows like a big Cameron, or he allows, you know, his Meyer checks back to get moving up the ground. And that just separates Jones and separates Wiedering. You know, we know that they love sort of playing within 30, 40 metres of each other so they can go and help out, be that third man up. I think if we have a stay at home in Mason, who, look, Wiedering will probably take care of, no worries, or whoever it is that plays on him. But it allows us to get that separation from your two big defenders who are, you know, intercept defenders, you know, as well. So I think that's why we've got to play him against you, and he could prove, mate, if he kicks more than two goals, I'll never let the amount of he's been given me about Mason Cox for 2 years. He kicks any more than two goals.
Yeah, that's why I'm being very nice about what I say about Mason on this podcast, because it might come back to haunt me.
It's just perfectly set up, isn't it, Carlton, Lucas? Because Carlton have, I just called you Carlton, because well, you are Carlton. So, but it's perfectly set up because it's just like the perfect worlds collide just to bite us in the ass, don't they? Like, I mean, Mason Cox has been out of form for 24 months and then he'll roll into Carlton at the Gabba and then all of a sudden he'll be this linchpin that he was for, what, an hour and a half against Richmond a few years ago.
Yeah, I know.
You guys do bring it on yourselves, though.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
but, live and die by the sword, Bobba.
That's it, mate. That's it. We all do it.
So the Blues, Lucas, starting to go, as we said, starting to go right, starting to pick up some momentum. How do Carlton win the game on Sunday afternoon?
I'd like to think Ed Curnow will go to Pendles with Sidebottom going out. Taylor Adams is in All-Australian form, but I'd still put Curnow to Pendles because he uses it the best for them. And like I said, yeah, I mean, last week, the amount of inside 50s that we had for the score that we put up is a bit concerning because it's happened the last 2 weeks. I think we should have put Fremantle away a lot earlier than what we did, and I think we should have put Gold Coast away a lot earlier than what we did as well. But, yeah, the midfield battle is a big one for me.
Tommy, same question to you about the Pies. How do they get the job done?
It is a midfield battle, definitely. I think we started to see glimpses of Grundy back into form last night, which that could be good, obviously play a pivotal role in us winning. But I think it's how both midfields are going to win their ball. I think it's how both midfields actually kick inside 50, use the footy, you know, the good looks it's going to give our forwards or your forwards. And then obviously it's about those forwards then converting. I really think it's going to be who can use it more efficiently going inside 50.
Yeah, I'm sorry, just to jump in there, Lambo. The Moore and Roughhead, the matchups with them on Casbolt and Mackay are as important as what Wiedering and Jones need to do. But North Melbourne letting Maynard and Noble and these guys get like close to 20 touches with no real pressure on them, I don't think we can allow. We need to make Maynard accountable coming off a half back, because what he did last night, I couldn't believe North Melbourne just let him keep rolling and rolling and rolling. Our forward 50 pressure just needs to be up, and those boys can't get off the chain because they use it well coming out of defence.
Got like defensive forward. Would you sit someone on Maynard, or would you sit someone on Chris?
I don't think we've done it, but I think we're just back like a Gibbons, and if Cunningham comes in, those guys, and even Eddie Betts, like, he hasn't been kicking goals, but his pressure's been grouse. And I don't think North Melbourne's half forwards hurt him on the other way as well. I think ours are, Maynard's going to be thinking, even if it's a Jack Martin sitting on a half forward flank or someone like that, I need to be defensive as well. I just can't be offensive. So I think, I don't know, Teague's really good with his matchups, but I don't think Carlton has a defensive forward, do we, Lambo?
Now, I think that what teams are going to do is play through those guys' opponents. I think St Kilda did it to Carlton with Doherty earlier in the year, is that they played through Jaron Geary. So Jaron Geary was playing, for the want of a better term, that defensive forward, but they were still using him. So if it is Gibbons and Maynard or whoever it is, like, play through Gibbons, because then Maynard knows that he has to have that defensive mindset more than his attacking mindset. But, I mean, as you said, like, they just had free ball last night. Some of those Collingwood defenders. And that's when they just drive from the back. And I thought, coming into the Collingwood side last night, I thought Levi Greenwood was quite good as well. I think, you know, like, for a team that has so much midfield depth, and you obviously are missing some key personnel, to have a bloke like Levi Greenwood be able to stroll in and just take a little bit of that midfield load. Tommy, you must have been pretty rapt to see him just come in and just sort of play that role.
One, obviously not my favourite Pies man, Levi. He's what he did for us and what he's done for us in the past, he actually come off a half-forward flank, and then he just also almost played that plus one at every stoppage. We sort of gave him Kangas their plus one in our forward line, and then he sort of just wrapped around the stoppage like just about every time. And it's just that presence, you know. And the thing I love about him is obviously he hunts the man, hunts the footy, but he hits his easiest targets, you know, which in a side that's bereft of players that can use the footy. I'm not saying Levi Greenwood's any, no Scott Pendlebury, but he actually can just hit his easiest targets. He'll just look, hit his 45 and just move on. You know what I mean? And that's what's really good about him. He's a real staple in the side, and no doubt we're a better team with him in. So it was just good to get him. And there was a couple of big knocks. He obviously tested his knee, and he seemed to be moving pretty well. So it was really promising. And I reckon he's going to be, you know, if we're going to do anything this year, he's a pretty big piece of puzzle. So, see how we go. It was good.
For the first time in a few weeks, Jake, I think this has actually been genuine insight into the two teams going ahead this week, instead of, you know, what the future holds and all that kind of jazz that we sort of get into in that banter. It's been really good. Looking at the statistics, just team-wise, it's pretty even, to be honest. We do, obviously, tradition, we get into some predictions. So, Lucas, let's start with you. The Blues, you reckon?
Yeah. I think with Sidebottom out is just huge for me, because he's given us a lot of nightmares over the years. I think we're playing the best footy we've played in a long, long time. And I think we're only going to get up by three goals, 18 points, I'd say. But not, it's a 50-50 game.
50-50 game and three goals. What about you, Tom?
Embo's eyes. I'm looking at Stooky's eyes, and it's the eyes of every Carlton supporter. They don't like going in favourite spot. All right,
that's true.
And I can see them. I can see the eyes darting. This. So, what Collingwood are going to do? You're going to come in and play some bully ball. We're going to start hitting some young kids around, and we'll end up running over the top. Just, it won't be pretty. It's not going to be a pretty game. But Collingwood is just going to assert some dominance, and we're going to get up by maybe 12 points, 18 points in a really fiery contest.
Beautiful.
I feel like he definitely triggered us then, but I was just, my eyes were darting down towards the Sportsbet app as soon as you said that, because we are $2.10 outsiders after last night's performance.
Are we $2.10?
So we aren't favourites. So you'd probably be looking at that game. It's probably a little bit more even than $1.72 to $2.10, but of course, gamble responsibly based on our last podcast. Carlton as favourites are usually pretty iffy because it's not something that happens too often over the last few years. But I am more preferred to be an underdog.
Look at their eyes. Look at their eyes.
They are very darty now.
We're going to call this.
If Mason Cox kicks over 2 goals, Tom, I'll deliver a slab to your door, my friend.
Well, we've got it in writing right here. I've got the evidence.
We'll have to write it down. But
well, we've got it in visual writing. Tom, what's your preferred poison, mate? Just so we've got it here.
I'm going to go real. I am from Wattle Glen, so I'm going to go real sort of bush and give us just a slab of turkey, Stuart.
Oh, Jesus Christ, mate.
Oh, wow.
I'm on the job keeper. I'll give you a 4-pack of turkeys.
Stuke, don't worry. You will not have to pay for that.
Yeah. We'll make it a slap.
I'm in agreement with both of you. It won't be the finest game ever, but I think Carlton will get the job done. So it'll be a great way to close out the weekend.
To even it up, I'll go the Pies. So...
And Paddy Cribbs will dominate because Tom always bags him.
Oh, that's a great reason to dominate, I reckon.
We'll let him know. We'll pass it on.
Appreciate it.
All right, gentlemen. Well, this Sunday, Carlton Collingwood, how good? Massive game. It's been too long since these two old rivals had a real hyped up sort of game. It's just a shame it's not in front of 100,000 people at the MCG, but we'll make do. And I'm sure we'll be seeing some byplay on the social. So thanks for joining us both on the Magoos again, and good luck to the Baggers on the weekend.
Thanks very much, guys. Appreciate you having me. Love what you're doing. Cheers.
Thanks, boys. Love the podcast. Keep up the good work.
If I could find a way,
I would take back all the words that I heard you. Benny, my man Jack Nunes, as we know, kicked a brilliant goal after the siren to resurrect the hopes and dreams of all of us.
This is last week's content. But
yeah, it was, but I was just giving you some context in case you forgot who Jack Nunes was. And so, did you know, and this comes from Twitter, where, you know, it's often not the greatest place, but Twitter has, you know, people like Swamp, so at Sir Swamp Thing on Twitter, who does some outrageous stats work.
And he
tweeted, Jack Nunes is the first person to have played VFL/AFL games in all 8 main states and territories of Australia, as well as New Zealand and China. He completed the set in Darwin on Friday night.
Oh my goodness.
Do you reckon, you know how people have got like up on their walls or in their rooms at home, they've got like where you can put pins in their world map? Do you reckon Jack Nunes has just got play footy there? He's a globetrotter and right across the country. He's ticked them all off.
That's incredible.
Where he can't go.
There's nowhere. I've always wondered where he gets these stats from too. Like, does he just have a database that no one else has access to?
The tweet after that was asking if there'd ever been 2 Masons that had played in the same game before, because Mason Wood and Mason Cox played. And then he just goes, it's happened 6 times before. And you go, how do you have a database for that?
I don't know. I'm guessing he does a control F and types in Mason for all games played and then sees if there's 2 on a game. I don't know. That's what I want to know. We should get our housemate Sam onto this for another deep dive into conspiracies. But
Or we should just see if Swamp wants to come on the show and then he might be able to rather than Sam just making things up every week. But
Swamp 60. Just want to know.
some random thing. But, I mean, while we're talking about him, we might as well get Sam on for Sam 60. What do you reckon?
I reckon I'll go try and find him, see if he's available.
All right.
If I could find a way,
I would take back all the words that I Benny, heard. Your favourite segment of the show, time now. Let it rip. Introduce the next guest.
Well, if we can turn our Slack notifications off first, that would be grand, because everyone listening to this in the future is checking their pockets right now.
Because I've exited the program, but it's still giving me notifications. I mean, you know, Big Brother's always watching, I guess, isn't he?
Yeah, Slack has a way of just coming back in. Anyway, we've got Sam 60 to our new listeners coming off the back of Alan Christensen. Welcome to the segment. This is it's a grandiose segment. You can see Sam here looking stoked for it. He has 60 seconds to explain, we're hoping, a football topic, and he looks ready for it. Sammy, are you ready to discuss your ideas?
I am.
60 seconds and 60 seconds only before you get muted, Sam. And time starts now.
All right. Well, I just want to give a quick shout out to Floorboards. As I came over in to record this, I spilled my beer all over my floor, and Floorboards are really going to help with me cleaning that up. Anyway.
11 seconds on Floorboard content.
I want to discuss maybe the timelessness, if a footballer can be timeless. Kind of sparked a bit of a debate the other night by bringing up the fact that a few years ago I thought maybe Lee Matthews, the way the game progresses and has evolved with the skills and, you know, tactics, that someone of the stature of Lee Matthews' quality wouldn't get a game in today's football world. Now, like, that's wrong. That's wrong. I'm fair with that. I'm thinking, you know, is there players out there like that? I'm thinking, honestly, Glenn Archer, I don't reckon he'd get a game these days. Is that wrong?
Glenn Archer? No, you've got 60 seconds.
You've got five seconds.
I'm done. I mean, I know it's throwing a spanner in the works, just like...
So I've just muted him.
He's gone on to mute there. And so
Glenn Archer.
What Sam's doing, because what Sam's doing is he's leaving us with a question. So we're discussing his topic for longer than Sam's 60. And you know what, Sam? We're not going to do it. We're not going to keep talking about it.
And that was Sam 60 for an hour. We should probably, give it a little dabble.
It's interesting. I think that the Lee Matthews conversation, I don't feel comfortable weighing in on, because I never saw him play and didn't really get a feel for the era. I think that there will always be room in the game for a tough back pocket like a Glenn Archer. Like, I think he would probably have to adapt to it a few different ways. But I think that someone that had that amount of courage and was that defensively minded, you know, he was still playing at the turn of the millennium, is that what they call it? Yeah. Still playing in the mid-2000s, I think. So I don't think the game's gone that far. Yes, you know, he isn't obviously as like quick as you sort of see some of the little back pockets and the halfbacks this day and age, but I think he had a skill set.
So, Jake, I think you've already given it more thought just right now than Sam has when he came on the show with the idea. I see what he means by it. Maybe I don't know about the Glenn Archer. He's asking to be unmuted.
No, he's not asking. He's demanding.
Hang on. I might just leave him on mute. I think Glenn Archer. I'm with Jake. I think Glenn Archer would just suit Richmond's game styles just to a T. If he gets,
he'd also be a bit of an enforcer too. Like, could put the fear of God into a few people. Like, he has that skill set apart from being a really good defender. He would punch the living suitcase out of someone. So
Well, that's been Samson. I feel bad. I will have to see him out in the kitchen later on. So I'm going to let him. We'll bend the rules slightly, Jake. I'll let him
slightly.
We'll let him rebuttal for say 12 seconds.
Well, I'm on sick. I don't know. You go back and watch a handball, like a Glenn Archer handball. It's like, you know, when you get like someone from another country. Like, you give them a share and you get them, like, you show them how to handball. Like, Glenn Archer handballs like he's a foreigner. And now I'm done. That's it.
Well, that has been Sam's impossible for last week.
Is that like when you see Americans kick a footy for the first time? That sort of setup?
Yeah.
I know what you mean. I reckon that might be something. That might be a Sam 60 for next week.
Pat McAfee can handball better than Glenn Archer ever could.
Well, there you go.
We'll leave it on that, I reckon.
We have to. That's been Sam 60 for another week. Sam, thank you.
Cheers, boys.
If I could turn back time, if I could find a way,
I'd find a way, I would take back all the words. Anyway, at the end of another Magoo's episode, I'll tell you what I reckon we're in good form, and that is through no small part of the people that continue to come on this show, and we absolutely love it.
What I've just noticed, Jake, as well, sorry to cut you off.
Nah, please.
Two episodes this week, and we haven't really spoken about the football that is to come this weekend, other than the conference call.
Yeah, well, I mean, the game's big issues, I think, you know, get done a lot by the media, and sometimes they probably don't need. And, I mean, sometimes our listeners would rather hear from other people, which is okay, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I found that too. I didn't think there was any sort of football, as in we're talking about the sport, related. A lot of just media-driven things about diving, et cetera. We've spoken about it a million times on here.
We're about to, for the want of a better term, dive head into another little footy fest. I think it's 3 or so weeks in a row of just footy every night. So there might be a couple of rest days in there at different times, but yeah, pretty much every night it's coming back, and it all starts again on Thursday, which will be good because, you know, whilst some games sort of got lost, I think in the last little block, there won't be as much of that because the ladder has really started to take shape. There's only five or six games left, so. It's all sort of starting to come to that point again. Teams are starting to do the ladder predictor, all that sort of thing, to see where everyone will finish. So there will definitely be plenty of interest in that. Obviously, huge thanks to Matthew Lodge for giving us some time to chat footy, his journey, and then also his experience as a GWS fan, which has been a little bit of a roller coaster. And we'll see if they can get back on the winners list this week against Freo. We also had a great conference call with Tom and Lucas, two big contributors to the Magoos. And don't forget Magoos community. If you reckon that that your team deserves to be highlighted in the conference call, the game of the week conference call, I should say, get involved.
Send 100%.
Send us a DM, say, we're playing this team and this is why we're going to win. This is what has to happen.
Even better if you're playing a team where you've got a friend as well. If you have a mate that goes to the other team, or an enemy, even better. That wouldn't that be nice? That'd be fantastic. But I think it just adds that general sort of, you know, if you do have a mate and you're like, you know what, I think we can get this out in the public a bit more than just this chat that we normally have on a Tuesday night. Jump on, send us a DM. We're more than happy to get a couple of mates on.
And we'll be holding Lucas to that slab of wild turkey. If somehow Carlton
get
over the line against the Pies. Ben, let's wrap it. I think it's been another fantastic episode. We thank everybody for getting around our content on the socials. If you do, you know, like, share, subscribe, all those sort of things. Rate us on your podcast apps. Makes life a lot easier. If you haven't checked out the Alan Christensen episode yet, it's available on YouTube as well, which hopefully will push a little bit more stuff through there, as well as all our socials as well. So thank you again, Magoos community, for listening to another episode, and we'll see you again very soon.
Bye. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos. The Magoos.